Good morning. Buenos días.
Good morning.
And thank you so much for this opportunity for us to share one of the experiences that we had with training community health workers who also work on dual roles as interpreters. So this is our experience, and hopefully you'll enjoy it. No relationships to disclose. To what was it, Cohibo? Okay, so thank you so much. So we will discuss in today the purpose, the methods that we utilize, the training, the outcomes, and also next steps. Okay. And why do we do this? Massachusetts, this is where we come from, ranks seventh in the nation with the number of recently settled immigrants. And Worcester, which is the city where this training was conducted and where we live and work, is the fastest growing refugee resettlement site in Massachusetts. Thank you. So the purpose of our program was to, as a response to the high number of recently arrived refugees. Refugees who spoke English were kind of, for lack of a better term, thrown into positions of community health workers without any training as community health workers or as interpreters. Because they spoke the language, they were just basically thrown into these jobs. Good intentions, right? The best intentions always, but they were really not prepared for some of these tasks and the challenges that, this pose. And also, as a response, we conduct a training for medical interpreters as well as a training for community health workers in our institution. And so often we saw that the training, during the medical interpreter training, people who were community health workers, who were patient navigators or promotoras de salud, had questions about, gee, I had worked as a community health worker and as an interpreter, and I have to interpret, and I often face these challenges. So over and over, we heard challenges, and we wanted to really help people find some solutions for them. So also we did it as a response to that. The funding came in part from the Greater Worcester Community Foundation. Always have to have a little bit of funds, right? Very important. And this is a definition that actually came right from the APHA. And the reason why I put it up here is because I think most of you here are familiar with the work of community health workers. So I don't think I need to necessarily get into specific roles and tasks, but I thought it would be nice to sort of segue into the next slide. And then we combine this with the roles of the medical interpreter, which is the standards of practice put together by the National Council on Interpreting in Healthcare. So these are the standards. There are nine of them, but under each one, there's a task, there's a skill attached to it. So I'll go into, they're not all here because limitations of time, but certainly if you have any questions after the presentation, I'll be happy to provide more specificity. So one of the sort of the, what we call in the interpreting world, the golden rules, is that the interpreter renders all message accurately and completely without editing, omitting, polishing, or substituting. And so the reason why I put some of these roles up here and some of the responsibilities is because if we look at that and we keep faithful or that fidelity to that single one role, if you are a community health worker and the patient or your client has told you something that he or she does not want you to disclose with anybody else, how does that affect then that relationship when you are in the interpreting session and you have information that the patient has already shared with you or that the patient chooses not to disclose and you think it might be harmful or it may be beneficial for the provider to know? The interpreter replicates or registers style and tone of the speaker. The interpreter tells everyone present that everything will be interpreted as well. So you can already start to see some of how this begins to get a little complicated. More of the roles here, the interpreter maintains transparency. The interpreter promotes direct communication among all parties in the encounter. The interpreter promotes patient autonomy. And again, if we just kind of look at this with a careful eye, we could begin to see maintains transparency, for example, but you are advocating for the patient that you're working with as a community health worker. So how does that come into play in this dual role? The interpreter promotes patient autonomy. So when we are exclusively interpreting, we have perhaps the capability or the capacity to maintain transparent. But when we are advocating and we have worked with this client for 6 months or 2 years, and you know their struggles, you know that because of their immigration status, they may not be able to be so compliant with certain things. How do you maintain, how do you promote and maintain and keep that from happening? So, and the interpreter tries to understand the cultures associated with the language he or she interprets, including biomedical culture. I often say that us as interpreters, we have to sort of always work with one foot on the U.S. culture and one foot on our native cultures so that we can be effective. The interpreter limits personal involvement. Here we go, again, with all parties during the interpreting assignment. And so if we go to already patients' homes to pick them up, to take them to appointments, or to do diabetes education, how do we limit that personal involvement? The interpreter limits her or her professional activity to interpreting within the encounter. And this is where this second bullet right here is where I would like to focus the rest of my conversation with you, because it is possible. You know, a lot of folks in the interpreting world, the people who do solely or dedicated interpreting work, sometimes disagree with us that people could have dual roles and be effective at them, that they can really, really create pathways for healing and well-being for the patients that most likely represent vulnerable communities, correct? And so it is possible. It is possible. It's been proven. But it does take work, and it does take training. So, again, I think my conversation today is just basically to describe, but not necessarily to prescribe what should be done, but describe really what has worked for us. And the interpreter with an additional role adheres to the standards of practice while interpreting. So there's this set of standards of practice that have been created for us as interpreters, but yet there's patient needs, and there's all of these other elements that need to be taken into account. And so more of the responsibilities of the interpreter, right? And I often kid around and say, giving all these responsibilities, interpreters should really get paid $250 an hour as a minimum, and so do community health workers. The interpreter may advocate on behalf of a party or group to correct mistreatment or abuse. So the role of advocacy is also possible when you are in the interpreter role. But we have to learn how to properly advocate for patients or clients. And so here's the training. The training that we provided was a 30-hour pilot training. It was didactic in nature. We had group discussions. We had case studies and role plays. And I have to highlight that the regular medical interpreter training program is 60 hours. The outreach worker training is 45 hours. So we kind of made a hybrid of these two. It took the two core competencies from these two programs and combined it into a 30-hour program. And so, again, a combination of the Outreach Worker Training Institute core competencies as well as the Medical Interpreter Training Program core competencies. Yes, thank you. And so these are the core competencies that are provided through the Outreach Worker Training Institute, which is Introduction to Community Health Worker Roles. And we also on here may include it in about an hour of class, Introduction to the U.S. Healthcare System. And why do we do that? Because, again, remember our initial slide, that we did it to respond to the needs of people who had just recently arrived as either immigrants, mostly refugees, and were kind of thrown into these roles of being patient advocates, community health workers, interpreters, without any training and without any knowledge of the U.S. healthcare system, which I think we can all agree can be complex at times. And so we provided classes on interpersonal skills, communication skills, cultural responsiveness, assessment skills, organizational skills, and advocacy skills. And then for the curriculum with the medical interpreter training program, the role of the interpreter. And again, we spent a lot of time with case scenarios and case studies going over, like, what if a patient does lie in a session? What are you doing? What do you do when you have information already from pre-existing visits that you have knowledge of? Standards of practice, which are, again, there's a couple of them, the International Medical Interpreters Association Standards of Practice, and also the National Council on Healthcare Interpreting. Code of Ethics for Interpreters, Communication Skills, Managing that Triadic Encounter, because we often speak about interpreting as there's this incredible misconception that anyone with any level of bilingualism can interpret, and unfortunately we all know that that's not true. Cultural competency, again, providing that cultural framework so that it allows the patient to communicate his cultural beliefs, values, and for effective treatment and follow-up. Role plays, and then group discussions of ethical dilemmas. And a large majority of our time was spent on discussions of ethical dilemmas. And I've put some of them up here on our screen so that maybe we can, if we have time, we can talk about them. Thank you so much for helping. And these are some of the profiles of our participants. There were refugees and immigrants, foreign trained physicians, foreign trained teachers, lawyers, people who arrived here as refugees, and they spoke English and their native language, and so they thought this is a good pathway into getting perhaps some employability skills. Bilingual, bicultural community health workers and U.S.-born community health workers and graduates from high school to master's degree level. And so here we go. Here we talk about how do we negotiate these complex roles. These are just like probably a tenth of the ethical dilemmas that most often were faced by the participants of our program. So how do you work or how do you deal with an issue when a patient withholds information from provider in CHW and the CHW knows about it? Like, for example, something that could be potentially harmful for the patient, taking herbal medications, or perhaps not disclosing information that you know because of your previous experience it might be harmful directly to the patient or to their children. When a patient client has specific religious cultural beliefs that interfere with care and treatment, for example, a Muslim person who may need chemotherapy, and this was a real story that was brought up into our conversation, where that in order for them to be able to pray, they could not have any open skin. And so going through a chemotherapy didn't work for this person. So they refused the treatment, and they took a lot of negotiation and cultural brokering so that the patient could have appropriate or adequate access to this so needed treatment. When a client feels that he's being mistreated by a provider, this happens often, where they feel disrespected or mistreated by a particular provider, medical provider, and that could be anyone from the nurse to the receptionist, and they would like you for your support and for you to give your input about what you've observed. So there again, are we being neutral? Are we being transparent with our practices? When a client discloses homicidal thoughts. And again, this is clear to a lot of us who have gone through training that there is exceptions to keeping confidentiality. However, when you have not been trained or provided this opportunity to ask this question, it becomes really a daunting task. And so this came up a lot in our conversation. And then when a CHW has experienced trauma and you are now asked to interpret for someone who has experienced similar trauma, how do we deal with this, and what safeguards do we have into place for people that have really experienced some vicarious trauma? And as you most often know, a lot of the refugee populations often spend a lot of time in camps, have been victims of trauma or abuse, and it doesn't discriminate, right? So then you have a CHW working under this capacity and have to deal with it and hear this and relive this experience all over herself or himself. So kind of really made us think about what safeguards are we responsible to create so that we can protect also and guard our CHWs or promotoras. These are some of the questions that the community health workers ask. How to balance both roles? How do you really find a healthy balance between these two roles? Where does one role end and another one begin? When do you stop being the interpreter and then switch off to that community health worker hat? Where do we go when these two roles are conflicting? And how to educate clients about their roles? Because we go to trainings, correct? To get training, hopefully, around community health work or interpreters or however, but patients don't necessarily go to trainings to know what your role is and what you should be at, how they should be doing things or not, and how to educate providers about your role as a community health worker, but also as an interpreter. And so these are the results that we had with the training. The participants gained an understanding of the complex roles and how to manage them. They excelled in the participation of the regular 60-hour medical interpreter training program. And the reason for that is because they understood now the roles, the complexity of these roles, and therefore were able to bring that knowledge and transfer into the regular 60-hour training, and they excelled. And they, at least six interpreters or participants from the program, obtained employment as either community health workers or interpreters after the training, with the condition that they would go through the 60-hour medical interpreter training program. Yes, thank you. So some of the lessons that we learned were that there was no really training. That was not much of a surprise to us, that there was no training specifically geared to have these dilemmas and concerns voiced. Community health workers face many dilemmas in negotiating and maintaining roles and boundaries. And boundaries was also a huge issue during this training, where when interpreter or a CHW is visiting the patient at home, how do you keep those boundaries? And that you see and that you observe and you experience certain experiences that really conflict with what the healthcare provider or the therapist is trying to achieve. A large number of CHWs receive very little supervision and support. I don't know if many of you have heard this, but this is often a concern that gets voiced over and over, that they have very supervision and support. So when these roles are conflicting, they really don't know where to go with this. There are no clear established and defined roles for dual role employees. And I think you spoke about this earlier too, that there's these expectations that are different from center to center, from hospital or healthcare center, from one to another, even within the same institution. I think certain people have different expectations of community health worker or promotoras or promotores. There are many CHWs are not effectively functioning within these roles. They become frustrated, they become angered at times with sort of the disparities that they see with their workload. You know, they have 30 something patients or clients to assist or navigate for, while somebody else may not have these, and really complicated cases at times. So experience isolation. This is a quote from one of the participants, no one else does what I do. No one can really relate to the nature of my work. And another quote was, I often get questioned about how do I spend my day? So a lot of really misconceptions about what really a community health worker does and how their role plays out. And so next steps, we do have some next steps, fortunately. And it was thanks to a grant that we got from the Clinical and Translation Science Award. And this funding comes from the NIH. And so we're looking at a project to hopefully begin within the next 2 or 3 months. And so the project will entail interviewing community health workers, interviewing providers, and that includes medical providers as well as maybe some social work and some of the also the HR, human resource staff. Interview key stakeholders and what can we structurally put into place for such situations. And these are some of the questions that we're going to be asking. These are not all of them, but these are some of the questions that we will be asking with this project is, to what extent are bilingual CHWs asked to interpret? So we want to look at what percentage of their time are they spending interpreting? What have they been trained? Have they been trained on either role? What are the implications for job descriptions and pay compensations? Do we pay somebody the same for having dual roles as somebody who only has a single role. What are the challenges and ethical dilemmas that people face in these roles? And what should be some safeguards? Again, one of the things that became really clear for me during this training is that we definitely must look at some safeguards for people that have experiences of either trauma or abuse. And should people be serving as community health workers and interpreters at the same time? You know, it's really a good question to be asking ourselves. Is it effective? Again, the effectiveness of it. Is it effective? Is it more complicated than we think it is? And a lot of times we think it's working okay because we have best intentions, but is it really putting that strain on that community health worker that could probably be doing a better job if there was a dedicated interpreter for some of these sessions? Thank you. And again, thank you for being here so early. And I guess we'll have time for questions now. Thank you.
Thank you for that wonderful information on CHW training. And now we're going to go ahead and open the floor for questions.
Did you think about when you were thinking about, you know, going out and advocating for community health workers and this is the cost, looking at what it costs to deliver the intervention and how much of that you want to keep in a project that's going to use community health workers, but it wouldn't be a research project, but what are those elements that you would want to keep? For example, the fidelity where they're tape recording.
Right.
You know, someone's going to have to analyze
the supervisory costs.
Exactly.
And
so supervisory cost, mileage for travel, materials, printing, copying. Are there incentives that are given? Are there celebrations given for folks? All of those costs, were those?
I think we didn't. I you know, in calculating this, I didn't throw the full freight into this. You're absolutely right. Those would be reasonable costs, and I think as we do a cost-effective analysis, we'll have to look at that as well as things like training time, the ongoing, you know, continuing education pieces, and so on. But I think overall, those tend to be more marginal than the salary line itself. I mean, it's always the position that is the big barrier, at least in my experience. But I think you're right. To be full, you know, for full disclosure, we would do a full cost-benefit analysis. I really just wanted to look at the cost of the problem.
Okay. Go ahead.
I have a question. Thank you for the presentation. Because you focus on diabetes, what do you attribute the changes in hypertension and obesity or weight? Do you think it was because there was not enough information given to them or practical approach?
I think the question is, you know, why did we not see necessarily blood pressure control? And I think in large part our content was driven around diabetes particularly. And of course the other piece is one of the key elements in our curriculum is check your blood glucose, know what to do with it. So an individual has a daily feedback of how my diabetes is doing. If I were to do this again, I would certainly think about, A, training the community health workers to do blood pressure checks so that when they come to the house, they could say, oh, look, your blood pressure is higher today. Let's problem solve around that, just the same way they did on glucose. And then, because I think feedback is very important for change, you know, getting on the scale. We really focused on the glucoses, and we got what we trained people to do.
Somebody had a question.
Okay. With regards to the audio taping of the interaction, I'm intrigued by a couple things. One is, how acceptable was that to the patients that they were, the community health workers were intervening with? And also, well, I guess three questions. Related to that, how much do you think that may have had them hold back, the patient hold back on what they were disclosing to the community health worker? And how much of the time the community health worker was helping the patient to deal with some of the societal determinants, which I think community health workers are great at dealing with, and that's oftentimes the major focus.
I'm going to go with the third one first, which is, at this moment, don't know. I mean, we have thousands of hours of audio tapes, and one of the things we really want to do is understand what goes into this. When we first submitted this grant to NIH, I really didn't want the intervention to be as structured as it was, because my experience is that community health workers are dealing with, you know, my kid was just arrested, the power's been turned off, I don't know where my next meal is, you know, my husband, you know, on and on and on. And NIH had a problem with that, because they really wanted a manualized intervention. But we told our community health workers, we need you to deliver this piece, but we know, and so we know that there was a significant amount of time on psychosocial factors and communal social determinants of health. The tape recording was largely well accepted. We know that there were times that the participants said, we turned it off for a while, and they would turn it off, you know, and that was always the option all the way through. I don't think we had too many. Do you know if we had anybody who just said no taping at all? I think most of it was turn off in the middle.
The way they described it is people were a little at first, but they were really small.
Yeah, they were digital.
And then very good at this. I mean, the first time you're like, oh, really? And then after that, they just kind of stopped worrying about it. They didn't have a lot of issues.
So, yeah, I think that's the main.
On the tapes, I've listened to some of them, so anecdotally, one of the things that strikes me, that's why I'm really excited, if someone will give some money, is not so much around the psychosocial issues, but the wording and dialogue that the community health workers use around diabetes was not exactly what we taught them. A little off. It was a little, it was not as technical, and a physician or endocrinologist might have gotten upset by that, but yet the response from the participant was exactly the response that we wanted. And like I would hear their talk back, and they understood a concept in a way I would never have dreamed of, explaining how blood and sugar runs through the body, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, wow, what are you saying? And then all of a sudden the person would respond back correctly.
Right, they get it.
So it was really interesting to hear how they took what we taught them, turned it into something that, again, would have upset a clinician, because it didn't seem correct, but it had the right final result.
It worked.
You have?
I know, but I mean, but you got to understand that the NIH is getting care of them by that. Okay. So they need to see the response that the end result is achievable, even with the variation in how you get there.
Do you still have your question?
I had two questions, one for each speaker. I just wanted to ask Steve, you mentioned that you would possibly consider expanding the role to include more hypertension management. And this is one thing that with community health worker programs, a lot of them have been very vertical programs, so just focusing on one thing, but then when they start to expand, then maybe if you were doing both, then maybe you wouldn't have as good of outcomes in diabetes. So I was just curious, to hear your thoughts on that, if you guys have considered expanding this, or if you have concerns about if you keep adding on messages, at what point do the community health workers become sort of overburdened, and then the messages become really diluted?
I mean, it's a huge point. I mean, in some ways, pick up on what Molly said, that they do a lot more than we prescribe, and we know that. And you're right, but at the same time, if we start adding more technical messages, the risk is that they all become corrupt and they're not, none of them are particularly useful. So I think that is an enormous risk. I certainly wouldn't, I would be reluctant to make it, everything around health. The good part about hypertension and diabetes is that so many of the risk factors and behaviors are pretty copacetic, and they're really overlap. So I think if you went from eating more fruits and vegetables to, and let's lose the salt shaker, self-monitor with your glucose meter, and let me check your blood pressure, or let's get some inexpensive blood pressure monitors that you can use at home, I think you could expand somewhat, but there is a point where I think it falls off the cliff and you're ineffective with everything.
It is always a challenge because I think one particular situation, we are also a provider of, we're a language access program, so we train, we recruit people, we train them, and then we dispatch them as interpreters. So we actually, graduates of our program end up working for us on a per diem basis. And so this often happens, for example, we have the language of Sango now, a language from the Central African Republic, and there's only one Sango interpreter in the whole nation, not just in Worcester or Massachusetts, in the nation. And so that happens often when there's one Nepali interpreter, for example. She goes to the same church that all these others, that the members of the community, they mm-hmm. live in the same community, they shop at the same grocery store. So confidentiality really becomes an issue. And I think this is why I believe so strongly in training. And I think that one of the things, another intervention that we have done with the community health centers is that we have done health systems educations to patients, where we do tell patients, interpreters are not to disclose information. The interpreters know what it is. However, it is challenging because no training can guarantee you, right, that the interpreter will not go out and share confidential information. So it is, in some communities are more accepting of community health workers and interpreters than others, but I think what we've come to, one of the interventions that I think works wonderful is the community health centers have done a tremendous job in, at least in the city they live in, to really integrate these populations into small little groups of, you know, like the African tea time, where they bring people, all these women from Africa, and they have tea, and they talk about certain health conditions, and they get to trust that person that is conducting the group as well as the health center. So little interventions like that that I think sometimes kind of say, look, we're really interested in helping you, and you can trust us to do this. So I don't know if that answers your question, but there's always going to be an issue with confidentiality. There's always going to be resistance from some people about different roles. But I think certain interventions do work, and I think it just opens up the door for dialogue. And even if somebody is disclosing personal information, or they should, you know, we should know, and we should be able to be ready to deal with that.
Leslie, you had a question?
I just had a quick question, and maybe I may have missed it early. In the match study, were these documented or undocumented or both? Or
both.
Both, okay. So there were, again, I was concerned about the accepting the audio taping and having their information and stuff. It's usually a big issue.
Absolutely. We didn't ask a lot of, you know, documentation and social work, social screening. We didn't ask people, but you know.
Sergio?
Hi, Mitchell. Thank you. I want to use Molly's example to ask my question as she answered. So community health workers, we are our own profession. And we actually have our own code of ethics and our own core values as a practice. So I think I'm trying to understand the purpose, Nancy, of it seems to me like trying to put a square around something. So here's my question. So interpreters, it's a practice. They have their core values and their ethics. We're our own practice and we have our own core values and ethics. And they're different. And so interpretation and translation is sometimes a task, an activity that we engage in. It's not a role of ours. We don't just do that to do that. We do that for a bigger purpose. Right? Mm-hmm. So why I don't understand the need to impose the core values of another practice on us. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe you can help me out. If our purpose is to achieve understanding, understand the process, and somebody else's purpose is to achieve accuracy. I'm not sure that those are compatible. So help me.
Yeah, sure. And so I'll do my best to try to help here. But I absolutely understand what you're saying. And this is precisely why we have this training. Because when you are a community health worker and you're helping that patient, you pick up that patient at home and you bring them into the emergency room or for their diabetic care, you are on that role or that task of the community health worker. But the minute that you step into that room and you are interpreting, this is where we wanted to make clear that, for example, it could be, that, so I guess we need to look at the definition of, is it just part of, again, it's your role as a community health worker. And if that is your job as a community health worker, then you don't necessarily have to adopt or integrate all of these other ethics related to interpreting. Okay? You wouldn't have to. That would not be necessary because you are on the role or with the hat of a community health worker. So if your client happens to be monolingual and all they speak is Chinese, then you act as the community health worker and you're facilitating also the communication. There's no necessity or no need for that person to change anything, really. But the challenge becomes when the person is there and then we say, okay, you are a community health worker, but you're also an interpreter. So there's two titles here. That's where the concern comes in, because not everybody is just holding the single role of a community health worker. Most often, there's the role of the interpreter as well. And we wanted people to be able to feel safe in either one of these roles, to have some guiding posts to guide their work. Because if you think about some of the complexities that we talked about, so if you are a community health worker and you come into this center, let me give you an example. A woman who was working with a Latina patient who was 63 years old and went through a lot of work to get her some care because she was undocumented. Finally gets her glasses, just simple pair. I think the glasses ended up costing $120. So the patient gets them, 3 weeks later there are no glasses. And so the interpreter tries to figure out, the community health worker tries to figure out what happened to the glasses. And through conversation and trust, the woman ends up telling her, she shipped them off to Cuba to her twin sister who has no glasses. So now the community health worker has information about what really happened to these glasses. Now when she goes to her next appointment and the doctor has problems with her vision and the doctor says, well, aren't you using your glasses? And they ask the patient, what happened to your glasses? And the patient says, well, I lost them. And the community health worker knows she did not lose them. How do you deal with that conflict? How do you, and you're interpreting. So this person now is interpreting in this room and saying, now they have information that it conflicts with what the patient is saying. How do you manage those two things? Yes.
Seems to me in an ideal world, though, then you would have the patient, their community health worker, an interpreter, a separate person.
Right.
And then the
ideally.
But I think what happens often, from what I understand, is that community health workers, because they are bilingual, are drawn in for any situation that happens to be interpreters, which is not their role. But which I think they frequently get brought in.
In an ideal world, we would have that model, right? We would have the model of the community health worker, the interpreter, and the medical provider. But unfortunately, that doesn't happen. And we, again, it's a matter of saying, because it is possible then too, for that community health worker, that's the beauty of having a community health worker, they can say, gee, we could have done this particular intervention about your glasses without you having to ship them off to Cuba. Or that is not appropriate to do because then you're not going to get more glasses you'll have to wait a year until you can get another set of glasses. But that is not possible without training. Our question is, does the So does the community health worker then at that moment discloses everything, because if you're supposed to interpret accurately and completely, and but what do you do when you know it's the information is different and it has may have some severe consequences for the patient?
Right.
I think
so
you
I could suggest we might respond to that kind of situation at any situation according to our own code of ethics,
right.
Not the code of ethics of another practice.
Exactly. Right. So I think it's a question of not so much what the roles are, but what is that person, what title is that person working under? Because if that person at that moment says, okay, I am the interpreter now, see, because, and that's the problem, we don't educate community health workers. We don't educate our interpreters at times because they just are drawn into these positions and they really don't know what to do. Do they tell the provider that those glasses are not in Cuba, or do they protect the patient and keep that information to themselves?
Okay,
so
we
have. It'll depend on what
uh-huh.
roles. The
yeah.
Okay, we have a question on this side.
Actually, a comment for this mm-hmm. discussion and the previous discussion. It seems to me what you're identifying is what a lot of helping professions have identified as ethical dilemmas. You know, mm-hmm. 50 years of history. That you're identifying this for community health workers and actually interpreters, and helping people to process that, to think about how they're going to deal with it. The history of, I'm a public health nurse by education, the history of nursing is replete with places where your code of ethics says your first allegiance is to the patient, but if you do this, that physician is going to have you fired, or the hospital administrator is going to have you fired, and nurses have to work on a regular basis with trying to decide when do they say, okay, this is an absolute line in the sand. I'm willing to be let go for this because of my commitment versus what are the things, you know, we all have to answer to somebody. What are the things that we have to do sometimes that we're not happy about that's just the nature of the beast? And so I really understand that dilemma and appreciate trying to help people deal with that on both sides. Then I wanted to go back to the conversation earlier about Steve's discussion and the question about whether it wouldn't how much you dilute the intervention by expanding. And this is kind of just a thought question is, indeed that's true, and I think part of the problem with looking at effectiveness for community health workers has been that by their very nature, philosophically often, they are looking big picture in a way that the healthcare system has long since given up being able to
yes.
do in any way, shape, or form. And the bigger the picture, the harder it is to tie it to one particular thing. And so as we move, and I do truly believe we will move, not in my lifetime, but we will move toward a more prevention-oriented healthcare system where we're going to have to look more broadly at community factors and social determinants of health, it seems to me that role would become really, really much more critical, not so much in a, Steve, you threw up, you know, the idea of reimbursement, not so much in a direct reimbursement, but as part of a team, as part of an accountable care organization, as part of a group that's saying we want outcomes for this community or this population overall, and we're less concerned with very specific, did you, Steve, get the person there than we are with how the team got them there, and then you can look more broadly at things that happen in people's homes and their workplaces and not say, did that lower their A1C, but was that part of an effort that addressed the things that we are letting, that we don't do in healthcare? That's the reason our outcomes aren't as good as we should, because all of these things that affect people's health, we don't address. And I would love to see the community health worker role really flourish in that area as opposed to being disease specific.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think we have a couple more questions.
I have a question. I like the humor presentation, you know, the framing of it. Not that it would work everywhere, but I mean, I do appreciate it. So my question is, has that approach been appreciated when you've shared it with, say, insurance plans or providers? Or?
You're the first test audience of this one. I will tell you that, you know, and I've mentioned this to a couple of people at the meeting, that one of the groups in Chicago, the Centers of Excellence for Elimination of Disparities out of University of Illinois in Chicago, has been doing coalition work, and over the last year, we've been doing a more formal PowerPoint for health providers about the benefits, but without the jazzy presentation.
I was really interested in the jazzy presentation and what kind of impact or effect, because when you first started in the system about what if we were to think about, and I'm not
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was a survivor. And those kind of things, and the impact that it has on people. They know it. Everybody knows what Cialis and Viagra are because if they watch TV.
And it's only, by the way, it's only a hop, skip, and a jump before we start having, you know, former cheerleaders and athletes as detail people going into doctors' offices talking about, you ought to use a community health worker, you ought to prescribe one of those. It does get people, my hope is that we get people thinking about it differently because it's just, it's another, you know, maybe in the sense that as a community health worker to other physicians, I know the language and the metaphors that we think of.
And it's not dry.
And it's not dry.
Well, we're writing this up right now, and we're trying to figure out exactly the right spin and how nervy to be in the discussion.
So I would love to hear the results of the nervy.
Well, we'll send it to Jim, and we'll see what they say. But, I mean, we're being a little bold on it. And not just for, not honestly just for community health workers, but because behavioral interventions in general, no one blinks an eye when they add a drug to their insurance plan. The doctor thinks nothing to write you a script. This just happens in a second, in a heartbeat. But yet the integration of behavioral interventions such as this are so slow and considered novel and unfunded and things like that.
Right.
And I don't think it'll translate as well to a JAMA, to an article.
Maybe we could put some language in there saying really bold things like, why isn't this viewed the same as a medication that costs the same amount? Mm-hmm. The side effect profile is better. The long-term outcomes are better. Why?
And in terms of thinking about the cost, the question about adding everything in, if you're also looking at the pill, at the medication, aren't there other costs that, somebody's got to be checking the A1C, the blood pressure, and all those kind of things.
The liver function test to watch for side effects.
Right.
Or the 5% who end up in the emergency department because they had an allergic reaction. That never gets factored in either, so.
Okay, we still have 4 questions. You, and then. Okay, go ahead.
I just had a couple comments. One was, it was interesting because you used Prezi for that jazzy one.
Yes.
So PowerPoint. So it's kind of nice seeing them side by side. I like the Prezi. And in terms of the costing, we had Jennifer Werber, who's an economist at Yale, did a cost paper for us, and I can't remember where it was published. We called them peer partners, but it was community health workers. So you might want to, she kind of knows how to do it.
R-U-G-E-R?
R-U-G-E-R, yeah.
Excellent, thank you.
Okay.
I just wanted to make a comment that I'm a community health worker, I'm a promotora, but the job description to be able to be a promotora is you have to be in the community and you have to speak the language. So it's automatic without any training that they expect us to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to just throw that in and remind you that. And, they expect us to go in and interpret without any training because that's part of the job description.
The young lady back there?
I had a question about the $85 a month. Is that based on annual salary or per visit that you're talking about?
I basically looked at time on visit and transportation and multiplied it times hourly salary. It was a back of the envelope. I don't want to go to press of that as a cost effectiveness analysis.
Yeah.
But it was just hourly time versus, there were, because it's a study, we didn't necessarily manage the time flow the way you would in a going to scale intervention as well, where you would, arrange the visit so that the transportation was minimized, et cetera. So there's a lot of other factors.
Leslie?
There are studies where you do interventions on one set of diseases, or even like when you talk to doctors and you say, okay, we want you to do make sure everybody gets all the evidence-based screening for this cancer. And it's like one of those balloon dogs. You know, you push over here and say, okay, everybody's going to get paps and mammograms, but then cholesterol screening goes in the tank because they're, you know, focusing. It's almost like we all as human beings have a finite amount of ability to pay attention to stuff at one time.
We do. Yeah.
Leslie?
Right, they hire us because as community health workers, because of our ability to, because we have two languages or three languages. However, even the medical terminology in and of itself is it's another world. And so we expect community health workers to come in and just walk into this medical appointment and interpret complex medical conditions that we have not been trained for. We have not been given the tools or the opportunity to be trained. So this is just what the sort of like looking at these roles and seeing how complex they are and saying, look, we perhaps it is an opportunity to consider training so that you are more capable. Whether, you know, the intent is not to substitute one role over the other, it's just to be ready for both of them when the time approaches. And I think differentiating between our roles too, like where do we draw our line? Yes.
There is a community interpreter's training that a colleague of mine and I developed for AIPAC here in Virginia.
In Virginia.
And it's community interpreting. Uh-huh. But it's a 5-day, 40 hours, but it has 3 days community interpreting and 2 days for medical interpreting. Mm-hmm. And so it is available through AIPAC, and we are able to train interpreters, my colleague and I. So go around the country. We did it here for 5 years, faculty of AHAC, but it's a good opportunity. Even if the community health worker has that hat, but he or she can put the hat away and put the interpreter's hat on. So it would be wonderful if they can have that opportunity for training.
Okay, our time is almost up. Are there any other questions? If not, I want to thank the two presenters. Thank you for the wonderful presentation.